Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Thank you, Brian, for reading the portion. We haven't done that in a while, and I think on a weekend like this weekend where there's so much dwelling and there's so many intentions, I really liked the opportunity to be able to just sit under the word that we're moving into the releasing of. So I hope that that kind of shifted us into the intentions now, which don't dissipate or dissolve any other intentions, but they're all a part of the picture and the fullness of this tabernacles weekend that Yahweh has prepared for us. So just as we prepared a place for him to dwell on Wednesday, there has been a place that's been prepared for all of us to be able to grab a hold of the fullness of his intentions. And so moving into a Torah portion teaching when it feels like a different structure or a different time that we get to engage it even more fully, not less than because it's different, but more so because of what is encapsulating it, right? Like the fullness of those intentions this weekend. And for us to move into this releasing, I do want to just recap last week. So last Friday started with this continuation from the week before, which we know is what Yahweh does. There is order to his word. There's movement in the word as we move through the wilderness. And everything that gets exposed or everything that gets revealed is a part of that building, right? It builds and it builds and something gets established so that something else can be built on top of it. That's what's happening now, which is why it's always important to go back first and make sure that we understand what were the intentions that were released over us last Friday so that we can make sure to get the fullness of the intentions now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was a continuation from the week before where one of the things that was released was you are not the husband, and what that means for us to position ourselves in that manner. There was more of an understanding that came of what it means when you become the husband in your relationship with the bridegroom. Do you remember what Yahweh spoke, what Dad released about why we position ourselves as the husband? One word. It's a lack of something. Yes. In one word, it was a lack of sonship, right? Okay. So the lack of sonship is what has positioned us as the bridegroom, or as the bride. I'm sorry, as the bridegroom instead of the bride, right? And part of what got revealed in us as a people last week was the lack of sonship is easy for us to receive or embrace or be satisfied with a lack of because we operate in accusation towards him. So we think we have to take that seat, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why it's easy for us to step into a place of accusation is because he still resides in a low seat.
Yeah.
So what we have been walking out since last week then is the reconciling of the reality that we take advantage of the low seat.
Yeah.
And how that looks in all of our lives, from the spirit to the literal practical ways in which we take advantage of that low seat, going all the way back to religion. And how that was the structure of religion was to take advantage of that low seat and say, He did it all, so I don't have to, while he still resides in that place and is looking for a bride who will respond, because what also was released over us is that out of sonship comes sacrifice. And if you sacrifice in sonship, you can then co-labor to create a space.
Yes.
That's everything we're doing. It's right. everything right. we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And as a people, we are doing the applied work to grab a hold of sonship so that we can truly co-labor and create that space that he longs to dwell with his people in, but also that the fullness of who he is can be released from. Right? So we have to be aware of trauma responses. We have to be aware of the way we operate, the way we take advantage. There was just such a, like, a peeling back of almost like why we do the things that we do. And I heard from everyone in this house that everyone was red.
Yeah.
Right? That everyone's reason or justification or they're taking advantage of the low seat was exposed in you, which means as we come under this word, we're coming under the low seat. Mm-hmm. We're not positioning ourselves in any way to take advantage of it by elevating or promoting ourselves, but we're fully coming under, recognizing that the lowest seat is the highest.
Yeah.
Right? So while he builds up our identity as sons and daughters, it's so that we can then be trained to take the low seat ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. that's what it yeah. looks like right now for us to come under the word. Is we're coming under a low seat in the way even that mom and dad have been positioned, the lowest of seats, in that they serve the family continuously. And we get to come under that so that we can be raised in the fullness of sonship and be elevated into a role of co-laboring with him and always staying in that low seat, that humble seat, so that he can be exalted in our lives. So we get to come under in that practical, literal way, but also in our spirits, so that we can fully receive what he has for this portion. Okay?
All right, so my hope is that the family feels, like we talked about earlier, the momentum of this entire time together, starting with Wednesday night, preparing a place, everything we've done up to this point, all the preparation, all the food, all the everything that's been established up to this point, thinking of it in terms of coming out of our last meeting as momentum that we're carrying into the Torah portion, and that we're posturing ourselves to take, we're looking at every interaction we're afforded together as a community as one that carries divine opportunity for us to gain more momentum and more acceleration, more connection, keeping mom's word over the family at the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
That you even start telling yourself and talking to yourself that way, that connections are going to be established. I am going to gain more momentum. And then you're looking at what we're engaging in a way that you have expectations of what the Father's doing. If you think of just the pure nature of Torah and what it is, part of the foundational basis of Torah is to make you aware of something, right? Sin is what you're unaware of until the Father puts his voice on it to let you know, this is what I expect, and therefore now you're aware of things that you're not living up to, or you're stepping outside of, or you're dishonoring, right? So if you just think of Torah in the simplest terms, Torah is something, the Father's instructions is something that brings you awareness of yourself that you couldn't get on your own, right? As we were talking, just as I talked to, especially like I talked to the youth and the younger adults about the last, you know, time that we've been focusing on these things, what's interesting to me is, and what I've found myself saying to a lot of the young adults or the youth is, it's amazing how aware they are. When I ask the questions that are on the table, it's cool because nobody's looking at me. None of the youth are looking at me and being like, I don't really know, or I haven't thought about it, right? Everybody's giving me answers of what they are now aware of. And so what I think is amazing is we're moving in such a cohesive fashion that the young adults are articulating what they're aware of now because of Torah. And as we step into this Torah portion, we see a shift from instruction and awareness into a state of preparation. And so as we're walking out this Torah portion or receiving the impartation from this Torah portion, I want us to expect that, okay, we all have a level of awareness that Yahweh's brought us to through the days of awe, as we've walked through this divine time, he's given us all a level of awareness that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
And as we see the shift from awareness to preparation in this Torah portion, that Yahweh is going to download for us at some point this weekend, for each and every one of us, directives or a manner of preparation, something to do with your awareness, right? Because awareness of sin is not enough.
Yeah,
that's just the beginning.
Right.
And so he's started a process that he's going to finish. Mm-hmm. And I just believe that divine impartation through this Torah portion and this time that we have is going to be a level of shifting from not just awareness, but preparation, which is going to lead to activating what it is that he's showing us. Amen.
Amen.
So be excited for this divine time. We're gaining more momentum. We're mitigating friction. The friction's being reduced, and it's just going to continue.
Yeah, there's so much thinking about the timeline in the sense of being in Torah and recognizing that, if I could say it that way, it's like fighting it and then getting to a point of recognizing what a teacher it is. So then, but then understanding that it's only to point out awareness. It's the need for the answer. So it's backwards if we just claimed the answer and didn't know the need for it.
Yeah.
Because then you'll understand why Paul said, under this you had a tutor until.
Yeah.
As if now that Yeshua is there, you don't need a tutor. We read everything from the context like, oh, that's because Yeshua is better than this system.
Yeah.
And so he replaced that, so I don't need to be taught anymore because he's my teacher, not recognizing he's just the answer in teaching what the tutor was bringing you to.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't make any anyways. It wouldn't make any sense to be able to say, well, I have a teacher now.
Yeah.
To then not recognize anyways.
Yeah.
So I think I've said that. Torah doesn't bring salvation. Torah reveals the awareness of the need for it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But once you have it, that doesn't mean that you just forgo the need for it.
Right.
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 So we're tag teaming today. It was my turn, but I told him, I was like, you're gonna have to tag team with me because I have to be honest. The reason why I'm not excited is I don't know, like when you say coming under a word, I have to come under the word, and I in and of myself cannot put my finger on what it is that he's wanting to say other than the obvious. I feel like this was two chapters, four sermons within a chapter. We've got the lamp, we've got the Levites, we have the second Pesach, and we've got the cloud, and I'm like, so just teach on those four things, and then we've got tabernacles, and what does this have to do with tabernacles? And to be honest, he did not. I think I spent, just practically speaking, on Shabbat last week, probably 5 hours in this word. Throughout the week, I've been in the word, studying different angles of it, meditating on it, to where I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, notes put away,
and I'll just like go to bed and just meditate. Where, what is it that you have? Then I go to bed and I wake up. I'm like, I still got nothing. So then this morning I look at him and I go, I got it. Freaking this morning. Are you kidding me right now? But I so just got it this morning. I've got no notes. I don't understand it. I don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know. I don't know what he wants to. So we're just going to have some Torah time and we got the rest of the weekend to sort it out, because I'm telling you what, you all gone tonight. That I have carried tonight. You are going to be done for. So if this isn't good, just it's coming. Okay, first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of take a step out, and I think Tyler actually prompted the question last week, and he was like, well, where are we at in the timeline of slavery? How many, you know, so I kind of wanted to just kind of take a step back and just think about numbers from an overall perspective. And I think the reason why I want to do that is I honestly feel like there's a warning in there. For those of you that have looked on, it's not going to be this next portion that we'll be getting on Shabbat, but the next portion. So like in a week, meaning up until this point, I mean, these Israelites are amazing. They're like, yes, Lord. And they're just going through, I mean, extreme obedience in about two chapters. I am like, what if we were all red a week ago and that was like the good news? I'm like, what? Oh, please do not leave Tabernacles. And then we just start complaining and grumbling. And anyways, so I don't know if there's a warning, but with movement is going to come some things. And so looking ahead, I want us to be postured in whatever it is that he has for us so that we can learn from what's being taught to us, not just replay history.
There's
a reason for this so that we're not having to walk that way. I was actually just talking to the next generation. The next generation doesn't understand a lot of what we're talking about because they didn't, the focus is getting out of religion, and that's not the system that they had to deal with. So I told them, I said, but the thing that's crazy is that window of opportunity. This is what Numbers is talking about. There is a census at the end of this. And if we don't take that window of opportunity, there's a new count. And it's a new breed. Because all the ones that didn't get it, they die. So so anyways, you know, just thinking about where we're at in being read in this movement. So anyways, so we're going to kind of take a step back out of this. So I want us to understand that in let me see if I can. I wrote this all out, but I'm hoping I'm just going to be able to do it from memory. But the place setting of where we're at is we've been through Leviticus. Go all the way back to Exodus. It took them 50 days to leave Egypt and get to Mount Sinai.
Right.
So 50 days, they're at the base of Mount Sinai. They stay at Mount Sinai for an entire year. All of Leviticus is at the base of Mount Sinai, and still until we move, we're still in the first year of Exodus.
Okay.
And we'll get into the scripture, but it said on the first day of the second month. You guys catch that?
Yeah.
Well, they obviously left the first day of the first month. So we're about 13 months into this story in Numbers 8. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So when movement comes, we're only 13 months into this. So they have not even commemorated? What's the word? They have not honored Pesach yet. They've been given the instructions that what happened in Egypt, you're going to do forever. Then they get the instructions of how they're going to do it, but they haven't done it yet until they move. Like, we're right in that time frame where that's why Pesach's getting brought up again. Because they're inquiring, well, wait a second, what do we do with this? Because they're actually having to walk out the instructions of what's been told to them, and they've got some questions. Well, how do we do this if we're defiled? So that's why those questions are coming, because they're actually having to do it now, because they're back at the year mark of honoring what happened to them. They're like at their 1 year anniversary. Okay.
So is the first month Nisan then, or is it Tishrei?
No, Nisan. Because remember, in Exodus is when he said, this is a new month for you.
Okay.
So when they left, it was actually month, you know, one, Nisan, And then that's when their like clock started of leaving Egypt. And now we're back there right now. Or we'll be back there in a couple Torah portions. Well, next Torah portion when they move. They're on the second month of the second year. Okay? So I need us to understand, because there's a lot of repeat that's going on here.
Yeah.
So we have to understand that there's, and I want to say it's in this Torah portion, or it's almost like a flashback. So in Exodus 40, you guys remember, the setting up the tabernacle happened in Exodus 40. So the tabernacle was set up at the end of Exodus. So Exodus 40, there's a setting up of the tabernacle. It happened, and it happened on the first day of the first month. So in Exodus 40, they're at the 1 year, and they have set up the tabernacle. It was raised up, and we already actually read about the cloud covering it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this has already happened, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This is all the way, this is what's interesting. That's all the way back at Torah portion 74. We're in Torah portion 105. So we've had a lot of time in one day. So, I mean, technically, maybe a few days here or there. But there's one day the tabernacle is set up, consecrated, cloud drops, and then all of Leviticus and all of Numbers is still in that day. So a lot of what we're reading will be flashbacks. Because Moshe, this is what's so powerful about the word. Moshe is the author. So he's already done all this. He's writing it after the fact. It's not like a live story and they're scribing it as the day goes on. He's scribing it after it's happened. So there's reasons why you don't hear, for example, the last Torah portion. Remember, first of all, I don't know if we said this, but the last Torah portion is the longest chapter in all of the Torah. I think 89 verses.
Yeah.
It's the longest. It's the longest portion. But all of those princes that are bringing things to the tabernacle, you heard about them in Numbers 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we've heard about them, but we didn't know what they were doing. But it was on that day. It's not like they counted and then later on they brought their stuff. It's all happening in one day, but we don't know about it because Moshe has to. It wouldn't make sense to talk about these guys bringing these sacrifices if we didn't know about the count. So he waited until Numbers to tell us about the count and who they were, but it all already happened in Exodus. Not that any of this matters. It's just the way that I read the word to try to figure out, why are we still talking about dedication of the Levites?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Yeah. I'm like, okay. I don't know. Okay. So all of Leviticus is at the base of Mount Sinai. We're still at the 1 year mark. So remember, all the way back at Leviticus 8 was the anointed and the inauguration. Remember when we talked about the inauguration of a new ministry?
Yes.
That was Leviticus 8. All Numbers is just doing is giving some more details of what has already happened. So the inauguration and the priests and the dedication, that's all been talked about.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So just to break it down a little bit, Numbers 1 through 10. So until the next Torah portion, we're going to be staying at Mount Sinai until we move. When we move, we're in the second month of the second year, which I already said that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said one day. Basically, you could look at that then and say all of Leviticus was about 1 month's worth.
Yeah.
Not chronologically, but just theoretically speaking. All right, so Numbers 10 and 11 is when we start to move. And it's the 20th day of the second month of the second year. So when they move, the tabernacle has been built. That part, I think, is what is important. The tabernacle has actually been built now for 1 month and 20 days. So when he's talking about the preparation, the tabernacle has been in function and them practicing and doing and learning for 1 month and 20 days before he says, "Okay, pick up and go." Break it down a little bit more. Numbers 1 through 4, there was more instructions, but it was a lot about taking count and duties and preparing to move. Then you move into Numbers 5 through 7, and we started seeing that he was addressing issues. That, to me, is them kind of practicing. They're working on this stuff. It's a month and 20 days. The tabernacle is in place. They've got order. They've got everybody's, camped out. And now they're starting to be like, okay, what do we do with these wives? Or what do we do with, you know, so it's like now we're addressing issues. Or this question now, what are we supposed to do if we're defiled and we've got Pesach coming up after everything you've said? It's almost like they're having to try to figure some of these issues out before moving. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. We've got the issues that are being addressed are purity, vows, blessing, and co-laboring. Like I said, we've got a flashback. We're going back to the Day of Tabernacles. Okay, I don't think we need to go into that. One thing to add with last week's Torah portion, with sonship comes sacrifice, but with sonship comes abundance. It wasn't just a sacrifice. It was 89. He spent a lot of time talking about what sons give.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because there's only like four sentences on what Yahweh gives. but that's why we have it flipped.
Yep.
Even in my own testimony of being a hypocrite, I'm over here for a year being like, your four verses should be 89 and mine should be four. Mm. Like my level of effort should be, I'll bless you with my four verses, and he's got to do 89 worth, and he's giving over the shining of his face. And in response to that is 89, it's abundance, generosity, there's order, there's co-laboring. So it's definitely a lot more than sacrifice, but there's so much in it when we respond as sons to what it is that he's given first.
Yeah.
Because remember last week was all about he blessed first. He didn't say, well, if you do all this, then I'll bless you.
Mm-hmm.
It was, here's your blessing. Out of the overflow of that blessing, this is your co-laboring to be able to get to the Holy of Holies.
Yep.
Or get into the Holy of Holies. All right, so now we are in Numbers 8-9. The way that I'm seeing that practically is we are in the last topics before movement, meaning we've had to deal with purity, we've had to deal with vows, we've had to deal with co-laboring, we've had to deal with all of that. Now we are in the last topics before we move. That's what I'm trying to put my finger on. Other than the trumpets, which are coming, which I find interesting in the middle of Tabernacles that we're going to be talking about, or, you know, getting into trumpets. Aside from the trumpets, the last things that he's dealing with is the light, dedication, second Pesach, and the cloud before we move. That's what I've been, like, trying to meditate on. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the context in the picture. I am feeling a heart to dive into the menorah and the cloud. So I asked Dad to take on the Levites and Pesach. So work? Is that okay? All right. I mean, that might be obvious that I would be gravitating towards the light and the cloud. I mean, to me, the Levites, it's obvious. Pesach, you get a second chance. Got it? Good. All right. Cloud presence. Let's do this. Just quickly, I feel like what he showed me this morning is going to kind of come at the end, so I'm just going to kind of highlight the menorah, hand it off to you, and then we'll just kind of see what happens with the cloud. But remember, the menorah is going back to Exodus 25. And what I thought was powerful was it says that Moshe built it according to the pattern. So again, we've talked about this when we went over in detail in Exodus with the tabernacle, but it's important to remember, because we're in tabernacles, that if we are his tabernacle, we are built after a pattern. You are not your own. So the menorah that is built, there was a pattern to it. Moshe didn't have creative power in and of himself to do whatever he wanted. It had to be according to the pattern. This is important for us to understand, because there is a temple that is planning to be erected. And there are things that are built, and you're not going to know if it's built to the pattern unless you know the pattern. So you're not going to be able to discern relations unless you know if it's hammered or not. Is the menorah that's being built, is it hammered or is it hollow? We got to know those things, because then you'll know if it is or not based on if it follows the pattern. So it's important. All right, so Exodus 25 according to the pattern. Couple things that, well, we can just talk about the structure of it. This menorah is different than any of the furniture that's in this space, because everything was wood overlaid with gold, whereas with the menorah, solid gold. And what's crazy about it is it's solid, it's not soldered. So it's not pieces of gold soldered together. It was one piece of gold, and it was hammered. What's so interesting about those two things, solid and beaten, what does that mean when Yeshua said, I am the light of the world? It wasn't a lofty, follow me and I'll light your path. Granted, Psalms is a great scripture, but what did it require? He's a solid structure. He's not pieced together, and he's not hollow. He's pure gold, which means pure deity. Purely refined. He's a deity, solid and beaten. I have in my notes beaten whole. Okay. Two things I want to point out before we move on is it talks about where it's shining. So remember in the tabernacle you've got the altar of incense is right here, and then you have the menorah and you've got the table of showbread. So there's kind of a triangle that's going on. When it talks about the light, it talks about it shining forward and it's facing the table of showbread. So looking at it from that, it's looking at what is it that it's illuminating. So why is his light shining in that direction? Is that it is shining on the communion table or the fellowship with him and eating with him. So you could look at that even in the continuity of scripture, that his light is always pointing that through him is the communion with the Father. That without the light, you don't have access to see what you're eating. Right? Without it is dark.
Yeah.
If there's no window, it's got like four or five layers of animal skin. It is completely dark. The only source of light is this light, and it is particularly shining forward on the communion table.
Yeah.
So that to me is a picture of it's through his light that gives you access to that table, or else you'd be fumbling around in the dark trying to figure out what bread to eat, and you wouldn't. And so anyways, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to point out the location of that and what that's showing. And then the other thing that I wanted to point out, what I thought was interesting is, I don't know if it's necessarily a bookend, but what it was pointing to was going back to the Aaronic benediction. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read the Aaronic benediction again, because I think that's going to come back. Adonai bless you and keep you. Adonai make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The table of showbread is a picture of his face. But how can his face shine upon you without the lamp?
Yeah.
Right? So Adonai make his face shine upon you. Adonai turn his face towards you and grant you peace. So again, looking at how the two intertwine, the communion, his face, the eating of the bread, communion with the Father, his light then ultimately points to what aroma is on the altar, right? Those two things are working. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
That's all I have for menorah.
So as we take a step back and think about the fact that they're only a little bit over a year out of Egypt, I want to remind us that a mixed multitude was rescued out of Egypt. You guys remember that? There could be a tendency as we move forward through the Torah portions to just think of Israel as Israelites, but we have to remember that there was a mixed multitude, which you can basically break down into three categories of people that make up that mixed multitude. The one group was the Hebrews, the actual Israelites, right? And then you have people that you would call sojourners, people that were not naturally born Hebrew, but they wanted to serve Yahweh and be grafted into the nation of Israel, right? So they're not ethnically Hebrew, but they're grafted in through the spirit of adoption and they serve Yahweh. And then you have a group of people who are considered strangers. They're basically people that you could call pagan, that left Egypt, but they retained their identity. They retained their pagan identity rather than assuming Yahweh's identity through the spirit of adoption. So you have the people that were released and rescued from Egypt were made of these three groups of people. Now, I know Mom's going to get into the cloud, but just on its face, the cloud is interesting because it was a mechanism that Yahweh used to come and go, right? Set up camp, deconstruct camp, when they move, when they stay, all those type of things. And I just thought it was interesting that you can basically move with Yahweh's family.
Yeah.
And you can be three different types of people in the camp.
Yeah.
Right? You can follow his presence, right? You can come and go when he says to go, when he says to stay, you can do all those things. And you can be somebody who says, I'm going to retain my own identity and reject Yahweh's identity in the meantime.
Yeah.
So as we think about this Torah portion, I think it's just, it's almost like Yahweh pressing out of us any, he's like cornering those things in us that would say, I want to, it's like kind of what Gabe was talking about would be a good example. I want to retain this aspect of who I am while I'm still, you know, following and moving in cohesion with the chosen people. And it just reminds me of Matthew 3, talking about continuity of scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to talk about Matthew 3?
Nope, but I'm in Matthew.
Matthew 3:12 says this, and it's just to give perspective that number one, we can be that third group of people if we're not careful, right? If we're not walking through the awareness that we're walking through, we can be those people that are setting up camp, deconstructing camp, moving with him, in sync with him, yet we're retaining our own identity. And I want to give context in Matthew 3 that this is what is in danger of happening. So Matthew 3, starting in verse 12, John is prophesying that he's talking about Yeshua. He's going to show up with his winnowing fork in his hand, and he shall clear his threshing floor and gather his wheat into the barn, but the chaff he shall burn up with an extinguishable fire. So if you guys remember the parable of the wheat and the chaff, he doesn't separate the weeds. He lets everything grow together, and then he comes at a divine time and he separates the wheat from the chaff. Basically, what he's distinguishing is what's valuable, the wheat, what he gathers into his barn, and what's useless or wicked, which is the chaff. And I just think that gives us a good, I'm not saying this as like this is something that we're dealing with moving forward, but it does give perspective that I feel like if there's any residue that he's made you aware of, don't move forward without preparing to deal with that, because then you will be like the strangers who are retaining their own identity while you're going through the motions that Yahweh's taking his family through.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I wanna bring context and perspective to what Mom had mentioned at the outset of Tabernacles regarding that second window of opportunity, as we're talking about the second Passover or the second Pesach in this Torah portion. There could be a tendency to hear when she says that, well, I I didn't do A, B, and C before, so now there's another opportunity. So now I get to, I get another chance to take care of A, B, and C because I didn't do it before.
Yeah.
On its face, you could take it like that, and that is not what the situation is. Mm-hmm. And that is not, and this, it's funny because this Torah portion says there's this extended grace, but if you read mm-hmm. how it's broken down, that is not the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have to understand what it is. And I'm even reflecting on, I can't remember how long ago it was, but I remember saying to the family, we're coming into a place of less grace and more expectation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You guys remember that?
Yes.
And I think what I was articulating, the heart of what I was articulating was on point, but this is bringing deeper understanding that, because even that puts grace and the Torah as a dichotomy at odds with each other, because one thing has to decrease for another thing to increase, right? In this Torah portion, what he's making clear to me is that as he gives more grace, he expects more. There's more grace that he's extending to you, but by the nature of him extending to you more grace, there's more of an expectation to where it doesn't allow for you to do nothing, but then receive another opportunity after you did nothing.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay? So I want to read that. It's basically in chapter 8, verse 6 through 14, where this is broken down. So if we read that again. Take the Levites from among B'nai Israel and ceremonially cleanse them. No, that's not it.
You're at 9.
9:6 through 14. Sorry. However, there were some men who could not celebrate Passover because of being defiled by a dead body. So you have, you can see the beginning. There's a situation that arises to where Moshe inquires of the Lord. So you see this process happening. There's a protocol happening. It's not just, I didn't do anything, I'm disconnected, I show up, and now it's like, well, you have another chance. That's not the situation. You have men coming before Moshe, so they're bringing their circumstance. They're submitting it to a leader who's going to submit it to Yahweh. He's going to inquire of Yahweh. So you have a system in place of submission, of honor, of inquiring of Yahweh, bringing circumstances before Yahweh, because they had a legitimate situation where they were defiled by a dead body, just like Mom was talking about. They could not celebrate Passover for a certain reason, which it explains. So they went to Moshe and Aaron on the same day. They had urgency. And when they went to them, they said, "We have become unclean because of a dead man's body." So you have them engaging in this protocol. There's urgency. They're submitting to authority. There's a chain of command. And they have a circumstance that they need to deal with. And he basically says, "I'm going to inquire of Adonai. Why should we be kept from presenting the offering of Adonai at the appointed time with the rest of B'nai Israel?" So there's reasons why they couldn't celebrate. And their heart is, we don't want to be kept from that.
Yeah.
You could see how this is
they're
already
hungry,
much
sacrifice.
Different than somebody disconnected, not motivated, not intentional, not doing anything, not submitted, and then them getting another chance.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Okay? Basically says, Moshe answered them, "Wait, and I will inquire what he commands concerning you." Then Adonai spoke to Moshe, saying, "Say to them, if any man, whether you or your descendants, becomes unclean because of a dead body, or is away on a long journey, he may yet observe Adonai's Passover." So Yahweh is acknowledging, if you're dealing with these circumstances that prevent you from celebrating Pesach, there's grace extended to you so that you can celebrate Pesach. Okay? You can observe it again. They are to celebrate it at twilight. So then he gives instructions on how they can celebrate that grace that's being extended to them. Okay? They are not to leave any of it until the morning. So he reiterates all the protocols, all the instructions concerning this grace being extended to them because they couldn't celebrate it at the appointed time. When they celebrate Passover, they are to observe all its regulations. Verse 13, but the person who is clean and not away on a journey yet neglects to celebrate Passover. Okay, so you see in these verses before this one, you see the grace being extended. Okay, that window of opportunity that mom's talking about is up until verse 12. But with more grace, there's more expectation in verse 13. It says, but you can see how because of the extended grace, there's now more expectation. But the person who is clean and not away on a journey, basically saying the person who has no excuse, yet neglects to celebrate Passover, that soul shall be cut off from his people because that person did not present Adonai's offering at the appointed time. So when Yahweh has an appointed time for something, right, and we have no legitimate reason or no excuse for a lack of intention of honoring his appointed times, those people shall be cut off. Those people are not. What I'm trying to get at is we cannot have a mindset that, well, he'll give me grace for my lack of intention. He'll give me another chance.
Right. Yeah.
Because what he's saying is, if you had every opportunity to engage what I've directed you to engage and you don't, or you're not intentional about it, that's what gets cut off. What gets more grace or what receives another window of opportunity is people who are hungry, people who are operating within the protocol, within the chain of command, with honor and submission to the authorities in place. The people that have circumstances arise that prevent them, and they go to those authorities and they initiate that chain of command, that's when the grace is extended. And you see Adonai easily extending that to them, saying, you can do this at this time. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that soul shall be cut off from his people because that person did not present Adonai's offering at the appointed time. Then it says, if an outsider living among you would celebrate Passover to Adonai according to the requirement, so he should do. There will be for you the same regulation for the outsider and the native of the land. So you see Yahweh, the nature, his character is equality and justice and opportunity for those that are operating in the way that he's called them to operate.
Yeah.
Right? Remember, being defiled or unclean doesn't mean you're outside the camp, or it doesn't mean that doesn't equate to sin. Right? That's just something you have to go through the protocol to get back in a clean status to be able to celebrate the appointed time. Okay, so he makes allowances for people that can't celebrate, but those people that he's extending grace to are still operating according to his ways. So when we talk about, I want our family to be mindful on a level that when it's said from the pulpit, so to speak, that Yahweh's giving you another opportunity, you have to put that in proper context. That is not a free pass for a lack of intentionality or not being connected or not being hungry or not, you know, operating within his protocol that he's given us. Does that make sense? So I feel like there was a bit of a clarity or correction that it's not less grace. I feel like there was a context for that statement, but this is a better general context that as he gives you grace, right, just like you were saved by grace, he gives you grace, he withholds the cup from himself on our behalf. But with that, there's an expectation that you will follow him and honor and obey Torah, right? So all the grace extended to you freely, but then all the expectation that you'll follow the Father's directions.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yes. More grace, more expectation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not, here's another opportunity. It's a free hall pass because you didn't, you know, you weren't intentional before. So now you get another chance. That is not what he's saying. Amen. As far as the dedication of the Levites, like Mom said, I feel like this is a reiteration. And even in the Levites, you can see this more grace, more expectation in the fact that they were given the position of the firstborn, right? The spirit of adoption is what they were, is the source of their delegated authority. Do you guys remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And it stemmed from a way they had operated before that was outside of authority. For example, that the massacre was the example that was given, right? They massacred that whole city or village, right? That was outside of authority. But then Yahweh honoring their zeal and being under authority is what gave them or granted them that position of the firstborn son. So when he took them as his and adopted them, that was their source of delegated authority. And that's what we see being reiterated here when they're being dedicated for service.
I don't really have anything else on that.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would point out is to, these are the, remember going back to that picture that I showed, the Levites? These are the whole Levite tribe, not the priests.
Yeah.
I mean, the priests are within the Levite tribe, but these are all of the Levites that are helping the priests. So these are who we were talking about, like the Kohathites, the ones that are, you know, putting the tabernacle on their shoulders, the ones that are, you know, they're basically the helpers of the priests. They're not the priests. So all of this dedication is talking about the whole tribe that is called to him as his, but they all have a different role within the family of Levites. Because remember, Aaron is the grandson. So there's a lot of family. The line of Aaron is going to be relatively small compared to all the Levites, and that's how much it took to safeguard and guard and move the tabernacle. So that's them now being dedicated. We've seen the priests, and now this is all of the Levites being dedicated.
Okay, the cloud.
I really don't know. I feel like today is different because we're in Sukkot, and I don't know if it's just because we're like in pajamas and it's during the day, but it just feels different. And I guess I'm having a hard time articulating, not knowing what I'm feeling. It's like there's this mystery that's right there, that it's almost like we're able to come in. I don't feel like I'm gonna have the words. It's like there's such a divine time for us to be read. We're in the middle of Numbers. We're about to move. We're being read in the sense of walking through Torah. It has been 105 Torah portions to get to the place to where we would see movement. I guess what I mean by that is we talk about movement a lot. I hold movement dearly because to me movement is, what are we doing with this covenant? What are we doing? You know how I talked about the going back to the opening. We're so busy fighting for our role as husband that we're not doing anything with our marriage out there because we're in the house getting healed or being served or having to figure out who's the husband instead of just, you're the bride. Now function out of that fullness, because everything, you know, like we talked about last week, everything gets capped when the roles get reversed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Any woman that tries to take the head and the man that doesn't do anything, we all know, just doesn't function. But that is what we've done with him. And so it's like so there's no movement. And there's this, I don't even know if I... We're just a crazy group of people that just want to be tutored and be taught the original intent.
Yeah.
And so we find ourselves in this crazy, oh, there's Sukkot in there? Like, where was that my whole life? I've never heard of tabernacles before. Even though we read the nativity story, I don't know how many times that he tabernacled among us, and we just thought that meant he was born in a manger. What was tabernacle? What does dwell mean? What is, I don't know. There's so much, and it's like here we find ourselves just rehearsing, which can kind of feel like, I don't know, Like, is this going to do anything?
Yeah.
But we weren't doing anything before.
Right.
And it just feels like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like raising people from the dead is like right there. Because we're just dwelling. I don't.
Yes.
Because we're not going to a conference. We're not learning how to put our hands on people. I don't know how to describe it. And I think what's coming up is just reading about the cloud. Because what it was reminding me of is when I was talking about how he's like the cosmos. When we read this in English, it seems like that's awesome. It must have felt really good to have a cloud. But what I want us to kind of shift our minds in is he is the cloud.
Yes.
But because we've looked at him as a father and he's like a human, we don't see him as this infinite structure.
Yeah.
And his presence being known was in a cloud. I don't know. It's like when we are during our, you know, our salvation story is Yeshua is so tangible. And yet why would we believe that Yahweh wasn't?
Right.
He manifested himself. He's just not human form, but he came as a cloud. We're going to talk about the cloud. So I want us to look at it as it's not like a rain cloud. While it was, but it wasn't just a rain cloud. It was the manifestation of that infinite being revealing himself to a nation. And obviously the cloud represents his presence, glory, and power. It's an easy, I don't need to teach on this. I'm assuming every single one of you guys that read this knows that the teaching would be you don't move without his presence.
Yeah.
Right? It's when we're trying to, but and it's cool when we read it. It's like yes and amen, but how many of us are like, I'd like to run ahead.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know the presence is here, but I would like to learn over here, or I'd like to go do this over here, and not recognizing just if you'll just it might be a year.
Yeah.
Of sitting under instruction and being like, when are we going to get... I can only imagine them being like, all right, can we go? The promised land is right there. And they have no idea. 40 years. Like, they don't even know this yet. They don't even know yet, those poor people. You know what I mean? But it's like, if you had to sit under instruction for a year and know that that's going to do something... Because you're just because you don't move unless he moves. You don't. And this is so powerful because so many people have asked, like, how do you remain?
Yeah.
He didn't move.
Yeah.
He didn't. You know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
He didn't. He didn't lift. He didn't. I don't know. Or if he did, when we, I don't know. I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not moving without knowing his not knowing. Seeing tangible experience manifestation of Yahweh can be that tangible. Right?
Yeah.
So and obviously this Torah portion is crazy because I feel like he just repeats himself 100 times. Like I felt like after the 2 times, why would they not understand? He just keeps saying, if it's only one day, you stay one day. But if it's a month, then you stay a month. But if I get up the next morning and I leave, then you've got to leave. I'm just thinking like, obviously, you don't leave unless the cloud leaves. But he says it like 100, in case you didn't get it. In case you didn't understand that I might only stay for a day.
Yeah.
Then we're, you know, or in case you didn't get it, it might be 20 years. I mean, there's a stop where they stay for 20 years. Can you imagine being on this process? You're thinking like, this is fun. He's going to get up the next morning. We're going to go somewhere new. And he's like, not now. You're going to stay here for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, but that's how important his presence is. Because at the end of the day, the wandering doesn't matter if they were able to have his tangible.
Yeah.
I mean, not only was it his glory and his presence, there was a safety aspect.
Yes.
Fire, warmth, shade by day. I mean, there was an aspect of being under him that gave physical protection, gave physical things, but then also power. I mean, Moshe just blatantly says later on, when we move, enemies flee. But can you imagine saying something like that when you've got his manifest? I mean, this is Yahweh's manifested presence over a nation. Remember, this is not just the nation.
Yeah.
This was 600,000 people. This cloud is huge.
Yeah.
And it was to testify, all over the nation. So just thinking of your enemies walking under that manifested presence. So anyways, I don't know what it is, but I just feel like enamored by the cloud. So I felt like I wanted to dive in to that because I think there's something for us. I just don't know what that is. Okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the continuity of Scripture because I want us to recognize that whenever we hear about the cloud, we immediately think of the Exodus story, but it was not just in Exodus.
Yeah.
We see in Genesis that after the flood, we talk about the rainbow a lot, but the rainbow was in a cloud. So when you're thinking about his promises, that his manifested promises are in him.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't just a rainbow in a cloud, but if we understand that his cloud is his presence because he's an infinite being and he's not showing up as a human, and if he's portraying himself as a cloud, then we see in Genesis that he was revealing himself then in the promises. This was after the dove went out and dry land, the beginning of a new thing. We see in Exodus, Moshe at Mount Sinai, the cloud descended. There was that whole, the cloud is there on the tabernacle, but before the tabernacle was built, remember the cloud had descended on the mountain and that's where Moshe was. Ezekiel talks about how he rides on a swift cloud.
Hmm.
Part of the reason why I feel like we're supposed to tap into this is because I do believe that this is a pattern of what's to come. So if we're not studying the cloud and we're reading it like poetry, when the cloud comes, we're going to miss it.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I think it's real.
Yeah.
Like if he's coming on a swift cloud, then we've got to get intimate and entertain clouds.
Yeah.
But doesn't that sound more fun than a healing conference? But if he's in the clouds, we should probably start entertaining.
Yeah.
Paying attention. Yeah. All right. I don't know. You guys just bear with me.
You're doing good.
Psalms. Clouds are all around him. Somebody's seeing something. And I have not known him this way. I mean, I've known him in story. I haven't known him as a cloud.
Yeah.
Revelation, there's an angel that shows up with a rainbow wrapped in a cloud. There's an aspect when I think about clouds, when I think about this whole idea of his manifested presence in this way, it's like there's a tension of two dimensions. You have the finite and the infinite, the hidden and the revealed in him being not human. There's something mysterious or something hidden, but then there's also something that's revealed all at the same time when you're interacting with him as a what do you call that? You've been saying it.
Inanimate
object. There's something about clouds or thinking about him riding on a swift cloud that is beyond our control.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about not, when we talk about not making things common, if he's not human, there's something you don't know in a cloud.
Yeah.
If you're engaging in a father or a human, you're gonna preconceived note. You'll have your filters. And that's not necessarily wrong, but I just mean like who he is.
Yeah.
So when we talk about it's unending, like the vastness of his revealing is like you having to learn a movable cloud. And think about clouds are crazy. To me, down here, they are adamant objects. They look like a cotton ball. You can touch them. They are solid.
Yeah.
Fly through them. They're nothing.
Yeah.
There's no structure. Yeah. What is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, but think about how you're talking about a cloud. It's like, it's right there. And then you go through it and you're like, where, what,
yeah.
what? You're nothing. I'm in it. I'm in the cloud, right? Yeah. I don't, there's just, there's so much to, I think there's so much for us to learn about him. Here's where I want to land. And I don't even know where this is going to land, but it does have to do with tabernacles. And it's what led me all the cloud. And you guys can study this on your own, looking up cloud. Like, where are you in the cloud? Then start just studying. What does that mean?
Yeah.
What is that word? What does that look like? But I wanted to go to Matthew 17 because I am like, I don't know. I'm in this. But it's the transfiguration. Because something happens in the transfiguration and there's a cloud again. So I feel like there's a mystery for us in sonship in being transfigured in the cloud.
Matthew 17.
I think. I didn't even write out notes. Let me just make sure. Yes. Let me read this and we'll just see what happens. First of all, I thought the only time that Yeshua was told, "Well done, my good and faithful servant, I'm well pleased," was when he was baptized. Nope. It also happened during Transfiguration. So I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, he anoints our public ministry. And then when we start moving in it, and then he does something in our future, but on earth now, because he said, did you guys know that? Let's just read this. Now, this is super powerful because it says after 6 days. Does anybody remember what happens for 6 days with Moshe when he went up in the mountain? He waited for his presence for 6 days. So Moshe's in the cloud for 6 days before he hears Yahweh speak. You can go back in Exodus and read about that. We miss so much because we have not studied the Torah.
Yeah.
So Yeshua, after 6 days, I'm pretty sure that means something. Now, the reason why I also think that means something is we are in tabernacles and we are in the seventh day.
Yeah.
Do you guys understand what I mean when I say that?
Yeah.
We're in the seventh feast. We're in the Shabbat of the feast, of all the feasts. We are in the feast of oh my gosh, how do I say this? We're in the seventh feast. Which if you look at the feast as days, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, we're in the seventh day. After Sukkot, there's another feast, and it's the eighth day.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Just take that. After 6 days, something happens in the seventh day then.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh spoke to Moshe. Something's happening to Yeshua. We're celebrating the feast. So something happens after six feasts. Something happens after 6 days. All right. So after 6 days, Yeshua takes with him Peter, Jacob, and John, his brother, and brings them up a high mountain by themselves. Now, this is just now he was transfigured. That's what I want. Three of you come with me. And I don't need 500 chapters. It's just, and then I was transfigured. I would think that would be the basis of the whole thing. No, that's just the beginning. Now he was transfigured before them. His face, guys, shone like the sun. Going back to the lamps, going back to the Aaronic benediction about let his face shine upon you. I'm just going to say this now because I can't get it off my heart, but there is something coming tonight, and I don't even know, I hope, I just know Yahweh's going to do it, but one of the sounds that are coming, I got knocked out because the song says, I think it's time for us to step into his face. I was like, what? Who sings this stuff? It's time to say, remember when I said there's something about intimacy? Like, I don't even know what. You guys, I don't know what you guys hear. I am surprised you are all here. Sometimes I think about, did I say that? Did I talk about being, oh my God, I did. We talked about the difference. Never, it doesn't matter. You guys understand what I'm saying. It's just crazy. Yeah. But think about his face shining like the sun. There is coming a time where there is a reality of his reign where you will not need the sun. because of the light that shines, and that benediction over that blessing is that his face would shine upon you. It's that you would have that level of light. Now, here's what's crazy about transfiguration. It's not just that he would shine upon you, because the more you're in that light, what happened to Moshe? He became light. He would glow. Anyway, okay. And his clothes became as white as the light. So he's not human right now.
Right.
But he is. It's completely tangible. Peter's just talking to him. Mm. Is it good that this is good that we're here, right? This is okay that I'm watching you. Your DNA is transforming before me. And Peter's like, is this okay? Is this all right? So they're talking. He's talking. Right? I didn't make that. Yeah, Peter responded, Master, it's good for us to be here. This is good. I mean, it sounds like Peter's being like this is good. I would be like,
yeah.
Are you gonna get naked? So anyway, that's so normal, you guys. And then he says you're gonna do greater, and none of us are transfiguring. But we will. We are. Okay. So look at this. So you've got the 6 days, you've got the mountain. You've got a cloud is about to come. I'm pretty sure there's some Torah references in here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is not a new thing.
Yeah.
Even though it's the new covenant. Okay. And behold. Oh, this is weird. I thought he came to do away with these people.
Mm.
And behold, Moshe and Elijah appeared to them, talking with Yeshua. I'm pretty sure Yeshua has a relationship with these people. He did not come here to say they all suck.
Yeah.
In his transfiguration, he's showing something that it's the law, the prophets, and the answer to the law and the prophets are showing you something about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
And I'm letting you, Peter, just be all up in this business.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The law
of the
prophets, that's good.
All right, so Peter responded, Master, this is so good, you guys. This is so Torah. It's crazy. We're right here. This is right. Okay. Peter responded, Master, it's good for us to be here. Why? If you wish, I'll make you 3 sukkahs right now. One for Elijah, one for Moshe, one for you. Who did we invite in last night? Where do you think this came from? Why do you think Elijah's in the list? Why do you think Moshe's in the list? Even Peter knew the tradition. Even Peter was like, all right, I think it's sukkah time. It's time to build kingdom. We've got to embody this thing. They're here. Because they also knew the prophecies.
Yeah.
They knew if we see Elijah, something's coming.
So yeah. Good.
Okay. So and then he goes into a whole teaching about Elijah. But anyways, okay. So I'll make you 3 sukkahs. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Wait, Christians read that and we're like, sukkah? Okay. And move on.
That must not matter.
While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them. And behold, a voice from out of the cloud saying, this is my son, whom I love. With him, I am well pleased. Listen to him. But that's so great. Listen to him. He's talking to Elijah and Moses. When the disciples heard this, they fell face down, terrified. But Yeshua came and touched them. Get up. Stop being afraid. Lift up your eyes. And they saw no one except Yeshua alone. As they were coming down from the mountain, Yeshua commanded them. Okay, so it goes into end times stuff, which we don't necessarily need to get into that. But he talks about Elijah being John the Baptist, and he gives some instruction. But I don't know what's right here, but I feel like there's I don't know what it is, but it wasn't until this morning that he connected that on. That in the transfiguration, that the transfiguration made references to tabernacles as well as the cloud, that shining cloud coming and watching him embody human form and yet not human form.
Yeah.
And how real it was for him to be with Elijah and Moses and to be seen mingling with them. And it being normal to then say, well, we should build a sukkah for this.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
But there's also, there's teaching, there's so much, I don't know what to say. But there's so much that he gives, because this is also at the time that Peter revealed to him right prior to that, I know who you are. So he reveals that he's the Son of Man. He also tells him in the chapter before, you are going to see the kingdom without dying. That's in the chapter before, the transfiguration. So a lot of people get confused of, well, what does that mean? Because it's been 2,000 years and a lot of people have died. So what was it that he was revealing in the transfiguration? Because he was showing something now and for the future at the same time. And it's in a cloud, and it's in faces shining. It's in I got nothing else for you. It's in tabernacles, it's in the prophets, it's in the law, it's in him, it's in the cloud. I don't know. That's all I got.
Good.
I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's good, but it just feels like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think what's amazing about, I mean, even just what has been brought forth in this Torah portion is like, almost like in the preparation, which is, I would say, where we are, this is what we're preparing for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Like in the same Torah portion, it's like they're preparing to follow the cloud of his manifest presence, but it also points all the way to Yeshua walking out the same, you know, some of these Torah portions on Mount Sinai, up on the mountain, encountering his presence in the law and the prophets is just amazing to me, that as we engage in this Torah portion, it's setting us on a trajectory to understanding Yeshua walking out a Torah portion in its fullness. I definitely want to dig into this, because
get a shovel.
Yes.
I don't have the authority or the ability to be able to speak on or say that I know or be able to teach on, but what I do know is that being raised in scripture, religion, whatever you want to call it, I was never taught to look forward to the millennial reign. I was taught that's maybe for later, and it's probably not here, and it's in heaven. You're gonna die before then. And so, like, meaning the scriptures prior to this chapter, he says there are people right now that are not gonna die, and they're gonna see it. And so then it makes me think that what system has taught us, you're just all gonna die before you see this. So then you think that all it is heaven and hell, death, and it's the end. And you're never taught what any of these scriptures mean for what's coming. So it's like, without being able to teach on it or have the authority, it's like to be able to light a fire that there is 6 days, and in the seventh is a millennial reign where he is in the flesh ruling on earth. And there's part of me that's I don't necessarily know why it would be, why it seems like emotion is coming up, but it just makes me wonder, how are people going to reconcile when he watches him work with Elijah and Moshe? What are people going to do? Because we've been taught that was,
yeah,
there's a better thing. I don't know. Because that's real.
Yeah.
There is a time frame after 6 days in the seventh day where he is going to rule on this earth with all those people. That's a lot different than just fly away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and they were seeing a glimpse of that in the transfiguration, mm-hmm. in the cloud. It's like, what are we, I don't want to say excited for, but what are we anticipating? What is it that we're rehearsing? We've never known to rehearse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't mm-hmm. know there was anything better yeah. than just your destiny happens after you die. And maybe all of you guys were. I was never taught about anything beyond just make sure you have a good life and you've made yeah. the right decision yeah. in Him so that when you die, you can sing hymns.
Yeah.
Or just not go to hell.
Or not go to hell.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so you're not tormented for the rest of eternity. Make sure yeah. you make a yeah. good decision. But that's all you have to live for. Not realizing we are actually... That's why I think I get emotional about it. Because, like, is this going to do anything? And it's like, it's going to do everything. Because we are going to be prepared
yeah. mm-hmm.
for an actual reign on the earth where sukkahs are... It's going to be normal talk. Should we build a sukkah right now? And we're going to be like, yes! We can do that! Or is everybody else going to be like, sukkah? You know, or I don't know how to... We are in the seventh day. That's what we're celebrating, which is practicing, just like Shabbat is practice for the week, that you're activating heaven. It's the same thing. We are in the seventh day, practicing the millennial reign. Can you imagine what it's going to be like on earth? I don't know how to.
Well, it's exciting to me because,
like, for real,
awareness, preparation, activation on the grand scheme of, like, a millennial reign. Reading Matthew 17 gets me so excited because it's like validation of what he's making us aware of, which is the validity and the absolute foundational nature of Torah, which gives us the awareness to be prepared, to be like Peter in this verse. Because it is, it's like even if we get confronted on our beliefs, to me, it's like you don't even have to articulate a case. What do you do with this?
Yeah.
What does somebody do with this?
Yeah.
Right? To me, it's like absolute validation that
yes. Yes.
Yeshua is meeting with most with the law and the prophets.
Yeah.
Like, what do you if you don't believe that? What do you do with that? Like you said.
Right.
But to me, it's just a great. It's a larger scale of just like. Torah is making us aware of sin in order to prepare to activate something. Being aware of Torah allows us to be prepared to build sukkahs to activate something. Like it's like all the same. It's like different layers of the same thing. But that's wild. I never knew that. That he said, my son with whom I'm well pleased in a multiple.
I mean, and when he's saying that in the way that I'm reading that is he's in his transfigured place. So to me, he did fulfill the scripture. Some of you are not going to die and you're going to see kingdom. You know, you're going to see that royalty. And they saw him in that because you. OK, let me see if I can do it this way. Place yourself as Peter for a second. He had just revealed, I was told you're the Messiah. Now, for us reading that now, that's obvious.
Yeah.
But you have to understand, they're following a crazy guy. Let's put this in perspective.
It's easy.
Okay, that was good. That's a good one. That's where I was going. So can you imagine? One of my disciples. But think about this. You don't know it yet. You're just following something crazy. And all of a sudden, one of the disciples says, he told me you are who you say you are. However that would go. And I say, don't tell anyone.
Like, think about, this guy was birthed from a woman. I am a normal human being. That's stupid. I shouldn't do that. But think about, they're following this crazy guy, and they don't know, yeah. Like, we know that he is the Messiah.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
They know Torah, so they know what to look, they know all the prophecies.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And this guy's claiming to be that. It would be like, I mean, it says that that's not a good example. I'm trying to place myself, because it's like that was the revealing of them recognizing, oh. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's born of a woman. Up until this point, he is just a human doing some crazy things, doing some miracles, saying some stuff, and he's starting to fulfill fulfill prophecies, but they don't know.
Sure.
If he's the savior. I think about it from the perspective of Mary too. Think about his mom.
Yeah.
There's gotta be a time. I mean, I love my kids. But if the angel of the Lord said, they're it, I feel like there'd be parts of my life that I'd be like, I think I might be crazy. Like, you sure about that? Sure about that? Right? I can only imagine Mary and her frustration.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting it.
Yeah.
That's why she kept saying, like, can you just tell people what we know? Yeah. And he's saying, not yet. But then wondering, is this all?
Yeah.
I don't know. You think about people who followed him, and then, you know, so you got to go back in time and think about the authors writing this. Transfiguration is super powerful, but to them, that was a confirmation of what had been shown of what he is carrying.
Yeah.
And what that promise is. So when he's telling them, some of you are not going to die and see it. That was the fulfillment that he is, you know. I don't know. Or like when they would actually be convinced. Because then, you know, all the disciples got crazy when he was hanging on the cross. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. They didn't, you know. Peter. He's the one. I mean, he's the rock. And he's the one that said, it was revealed to me. He's also the one that was like, I don't know that guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't looking the way that it was supposed to look. Can you imagine the tenacity when all the odds are against crazy?
Yeah.
And then when you're, you know, convinced, and obviously that was awesome. How good is he that he could have just ascended. He could have just died and left.
Yeah.
And you just have to believe he's the Messiah. But he's so good. He's like, here, let me walk the earth for 40 days in human form after death. But then the people who didn't see it, and they did. That's how they were in prison singing to the Lord. Mm. They're just so excited because they were properly confirmed in what they were following.
Yeah.
And then all they had to do was convince people. And that comes down to our identity.
Yes.
Can we get to a point where we're so convinced that the only thing you have to do is sing in jail because the only thing left on the agenda is to tell everybody else of what you're convinced of?
Come on.
Yeah. Versus spending your entire time being convinced, is this it?
Yeah. Amen.
But I can only imagine that they had to go through that. But what is it going to take to be 108? Okay, rose from, maybe that's why I'm so excited about raising the debt. Because then it might be like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm just being real.
Yeah.
At what point is this solid?
Yeah.
Like, at what point is this like, all right, this is the Messiah? Mm-hmm. We're going through it, but they had to go through it. To us, it's easy. It was the Messiah. But to them, they had to figure that out. But when they did, what did they do? And where are we at in that story? And was it at the transfiguration? Because they knew the cloud. Us, it's so normal for us to know Yeshua. We don't know the cloud. I think we need to know the cloud.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
we won't, the revealing of the law, the prophets, and the Savior will not be revealed without outside the cloud. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what all this is, but I just.
That was good.
We're in Tabernacles.
So is this linked to the cloud of witnesses too? Is that like that cloud?
I don't know. But I did think about that with the cloud. Are you guys like, is it starting to be excited about the millennium? Even though it's like, yeah. And what's so powerful is I feel like that is going to be such a, I mean, it's going to be amazing. And that's not even the most amazing because there's still an eighth day. We're only rehearsing the seventh day. And when the seventh day comes is, I mean, it's tabernacling. It's the feast. It's the ruling and the reigning. But even after that, there's still a new beginning. And that is what the scripture's talking about. Not one dot, not one tittle will be erased until. It's not talking about until the millennial reign when he comes back.
Mm.
It's talking about the eighth day when the new Jerusalem comes. That is separate.
You think that's in alignment with the eighth day of rest?
Yes. It will happen after the seventh day. It's the new beginning.
Well, you just say the eighth day of rest.
Remember, this whole feast, there starts with a day of rest, and the eighth day is the last day of rest.
There's actually an eighth feast. We don't necessarily, we haven't practiced that yet, but there's seven. The seventh feast is the Feast of Tabernacles. There's another one. It's one day, and it's the day after, which this year will be on Wednesday of next week, is another whole feast, which is a new day, which is the eighth day, which is representative of the New Jerusalem. So when we are rehearsing this, what we're rehearsing is the millennial reign.
Right now.
Yes. Which is celebration. I mean, Satan's locked up, but it's a real reign. It's not a in the clouds. I mean, that sounds weird. I just taught on clouds. There's probably going to be some clouds, but I mean, he will actually be on this earth.
Yeah.
And so will Paul and Moshe and Elijah.
All because Yahweh was like, let's just learn how to count. That was awesome.
That was good.
Can you say one of the last things that you said? We've known Yeshua, but we've not known the cloud. Mm. We want to know the cloud.
Yeah, the cloud will reveal. And I think we've gotten familiar. Well, remember I kind of talked about that when we've been introduced to the Son, but then I said, so now we're being reintroduced to the Father. And remember I've talked about it, that if we get reintroduced to the Father, most likely we're going to have to be reintroduced to the Son.
Yes.
I think that we're there. I think that that's happening. That's why salvation's getting brought up. That's why sonship's getting brought up again. Because we know enough of the Father's character that he's now letting us see what he birthed, what is him in manifested form on earth.
Yeah.
Especially because the filter that we've had when we met him was that he was against the Father.
Yeah.
Yes.
But because they're one and the same, we'll be reintroduced to some things.
It's fun talking about clouds, huh?
Especially when you get to learn 100% of them.
I only like 85% of the class. 85. The other 15%, I don't know. I don't want to know that cloud. The dark part of the cloud. Yeah, I would think about clouds. I was thinking like finances. We're talking about clouds. Like, what kind of cloud is over our finances? Like, is it Yahweh's cloud, or is it like a dark cloud, like our own cloud?
Or if Yahweh is the cloud, then it's either one or the other.
Yeah. Are you creating your own cloud? Like, I think, like, I know finances can get hard at times. Finances get heavy. It can get confusing. It can get, I don't want to look at it. And then there's this heavy cloud over it, and you're just making it from paycheck to paycheck sometimes. And I just think it's interesting, we're talking about clouds, and like what kind of cloud is over our finances? Is it Yahweh hovering? You know, and then when that cloud moves, are we following it? Or do we follow our own cloud in our finances? One thing Dad said last week was, like, if someone is elevated above you and it bothers you, you're not operating in sonship, which is like a trauma response to victimhood. And sometimes I think about, like, I'm sure we could all want more money, or I want this, or I want that, or I want these things, and we look over here, and this person has that, and that person has this, and they get that. And I just wonder, like, am I thinking that someone is elevated above me? Am I jealous? Am I envious? Is this a trauma response to victimhood? And so I don't know. I feel like sometimes we have to take a look and see what kind of cloud is above our finances. What kind of cloud is are we following in our finances? And it feels like, I mean, with everything since stepping into, like, Torah, I feel like at some point in our lives, if it is not already, our financial mindsets and goals and structures and the way we manage our homes is, as it pertains to finances, it's going to have to also come underneath this structure. And we're going to have to ask Yahweh, what are we doing with our, what is the plan? Like, is it my plan? Is it his plan? Like, what are you wanting to do? Am I setting goals for you to have freedom in my finances? And I know this is just a lot of questions, but I kind of was sitting here thinking, like, so, like everything else is aligning up. Everything else, like even me, my food, everything is coming into a standard. Like, is there a standard for our finances that needs to change? And not just being a good steward of our finances, but like, what do you want to do with my finances, Yahweh? Because they're not mine, they're yours. Is this my last 15%? These are my finances, you can have those. But then I have a little bit of this for me, for my goals. I don't know. I just think it's something to really think about and maybe submit to Yahweh and see what he says about your finances. If everything else is coming into a standard, if everything else is coming in under an alignment, and everything else is being submitted for a purpose, what is the purpose then for our finances as well?
Yeah.
So, good questions. Also, there is a special offering for Tabernacles. Did you guys know that? Isn't that fun?
It's on the packing list.
It is.
Right? Yeah, special offering. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Is that what this is?
Yeah. Numbers 29:12-13 says, you shall offer a burnt offering for a pleasant fragrance for God. And so on in the 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot, we're commanded to bring a special offering to the Holy Temple in addition to our normal offerings and tithes. So you have a special gift. Today's the day to give it, which is super fun. It's separate from tithes, it's separate from giving, it's separate from first fruits. Numbers.
Yeah.
Numbers 29:12-13.
That's so cool. He just keeps adding. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Special gift. That's what that is on the list.
I mean, I saw the packing list. I knew that, but I didn't know.
All right, you guys. Well, we can't thank you both enough for just the continual outpouring all week long, repeatedly from the very get-go last night to just the continual, like, today. It just feels like we're in a stream and we are just continuing in revelation. Like we've been saying, that momentum is just going and the weight is being added. It's getting easier and flowing. And so it feels like the Torah portion tonight, or this afternoon, is like part of that flow, and we're just going to continue in revelation on as we engage that. So I think it's powerful because Mom said, at what point is this solid? But then thinking,
I mean, I'm hoping 20 years ago, but.
Right. But if we're still at like 85%, like the things that there's those last things, at what point is this solid? But the very purpose that Yahweh has revealed even this weekend is to make those connections solid, is to like make those come together. So what we're afforded in, like, do you know him as a cloud? What, like, being able to apprehend the previous teachings about him not being common in the cosmos. Like, now we have added revelation of how else he reveals himself. That just adds to our ability to see him with the right mindset. So letting those connections come, letting those, like, don't separate that we're just having a conversation about clouds, but being able to continue to tie them together in what is it speaking in me to engage him as a cloud, and what is it solidifying that it's so much bigger than he's just a father. He's just like those conversations we've been having and how that applies. I just think that it's so profound that we get the opportunity to those that the connections are just happening faster and quicker, and we're like that he's adding to the movement. So we appreciate how much you guys have poured out, and we appreciate how much you are just letting us even be part of your own journey. And like, it was so profound hearing from both of you during our discussion earlier, and then having you teach, like, it's just so, when we get to dwell like this and get to see more, it just makes even your teaching that much more fuller, because like we get to know your heart more, and the fact that you are so open and just share, and yet it's in the midst of, like, this is fresh, like it is such a gift to be so close. Mm-hmm. You know, like, where else, we don't have, like, I feel like anyone else on earth does not get what we get. Like, anyone else, it's a sermon from a pulpit, it's not touchable, like, it's not, they're far away, you don't know, they don't, whatever, and yet we get you right here in the flesh, and like to dwell, to sleep, to eat, like, it just is such a blessing, and we're super thankful because it is a lot this weekend. You guys have been teaching and dispensing, and it just keeps going. And we're super grateful for how much you've opened up for us. That just being that Moshe for us, you know, being that like cloud for us to pull us in.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.